the vibes. Welcome to another episode of the Hoop Genius podcast, brought to you by NBA 2K24. It's myself, Mo Mutsi, alongside me as always, the one and only Mr. BJ Armstrong. BJ, another day, another dollar. How you doing, brother?
Yes, yes. All good, all good. Real name, no gimmicks. Beautiful day. A little cloudy out here in LA today. I could be in the UK right now. I feel like I could be in the UK. It's a little cloudy.
BJ, a little cloudy. I'm out in the streets wearing two hoodies and a puffer coat. That's how cold it is out here. You don't want to be out here in the UK. You ain't built for this cold.
You left Detroit a long time ago.
I got a game for you today, BJ. I got a game for you. It's a guessing game.
Okay.
I want you to guess the five worst defensive teams since the All-Star break.
Oh, wow. Since the All-Star break.
Since the All-Star break, the five worst defensive teams according to their defensive rating, which is points allowed per 100 possessions.
Oh, wow.
I'll give you a clue.
Hold on. Indiana Pacers? Are the Pacers on there?
No, they're not.
Okay, the Pacers. No, hold on. Let me look at the teams. Hold on.
Neither are your Detroit Pistons.
Oh, no, my Pistons.
So I'm not trying to catch you out.
Okay, the worst teams since the All-Star break. Okay. Okay, let me just, I'm just looking at all the teams and then I'm going to guess.
It's a good
all
one, right?
Okay, I'm going to say Toronto has to be in there.
Nope.
They're not in there.
No, they're not in there.
Charlotte.
You got to think, one of these teams is terrible. One of these teams has great offense but always got bad defense. One of these teams has a huge injury. One of these teams just has old players who are going to wake up in the playoffs. And one of these teams are going to be the topic of today's show and you're going to have a big rant about them.
Okay,
again, for the 4,000th time on this show.
Dallas. It's Dallas.
Dallas have the worst defensive rating with 100. And they allow 126 points per 100 possessions. Yeah. They are the worst team. Any guess at the other four? One of them's obvious because they're just the worst team in the world right now.
The Washington Wizards?
Yep, they're the second worst, 122.5 points per 100 possessions. Two of the rest are in the West and one's in the East.
Oh, wow.
And one of them will make me very happy.
The worst?
Or two of them. Sacramento?
Yep,
Sacramento. And then the remaining two are teams I'm very happy to see down at the bottom of this list.
They're in the West as well?
Yep. Come on, that's easy. That's easy. Who do I want to see the downfall of in the Western Conference every single season?
Oh, the Lakers?
The Lakers, yep. The Lakers have the third worst defense since the All-Star break. They're allowing 119.7 points per possession. All you're missing is the fifth worst team in the East. They're missing a pretty big contributor to their squad, so I'm not mad at them.
Golden State?
No, in the East.
Oh, in the East. It can't be Giannis. Philly?
Philly. Okay, so those are the five worst defensive teams in the NBA, right? Philly is fifth worst, Sacramento Kings, Los Angeles Lakers, Washington Wizards, and then the Dallas Mavericks. Now, over the last six games, Luka Doncic has basically averaged a 30 to 40 point triple-double. However, they've gone 1-5 over those games. They have a 127.3 defensive rating over that stretch. That means they're allowing, I'm going to say it again, just so people understand how bad it is. They're allowing 127.3 points per 100 possessions. The defense has been beyond bad. Now, BJ, we know your position on this. That Dallas are never going to win until Luka decides which position he's going to guard. We've heard that. If you're a long-time listener of this show, BJ might have said that about 4 million
so
times.
So there's nothing else for me to say.
I want to ask you this. If we took the mind of BJ Armstrong and put it into the body of Luka Doncic, what position would you guard if you were Luka Doncic?
Fascinating. Well, I think a lot about this, and I'm glad you asked this question, because I think a lot about, not just, you know, it bothers me when I just hear people will say a problem. Oh man, that guy can't play. Well, give me the solution. Mm-hmm. Okay. If I were
Luca, 6'7", yeah, very strong,
big
body.
If I was Luca and working with Luca, I would say, okay, I'm going to play the two position.
You're going to guard the other team's shooting guards.
I'm going to guard the other team's shooting guard. And here's why. Here's why. When you play that lead guard position, even though it's positionless basketball, it's not positionless basketball. It's just that the role of the positions have changed, right? Everyone now... We used to play positions where it wasn't you weren't required to be an offensive threat, right? Like, for instance, Ben Wallace could play the five, but you didn't need him to be an offensive threat.
Less than 10 years ago, you had Thabo Sefolosha and Andre Robertson on those OKC teams where KD and Russ were carrying the scoring. They weren't three and D, they were zero and D. They were just there for defense.
Okay. Now it is required because of the style of play, right? This pace and space. If you're playing fast, that means you got to get up shots. Well, how are you going to get up a shot when the defense is set? So everyone's trying to play ultra fast so that the defense can't get set. And the only place you can go to do that is shoot threes. That's the only place, because, Mo, if you come down and run a play and catch the ball, you got to get operating area to play, you know, and you have to be a great player to do that. And everyone's not a great player, regardless of what people may say. Okay, so if I were Luka, I would play the two positions. So that way I'm not burdened with the responsibility of having to run the team. That's the first thing. Because what is his true gift? If the man can score 60 points in a game, or what he's 70 points or something, right? Yep. Okay. Well, clearly, that's my job now is to get him touches below the free throw line with a live dribble. It's better for him to catch the ball below the free throw line with a live dribble, because now the defense has to stop and adjust every time he catches it. If he just walks the ball up the court, a la James Harden in his prime, you can load up on him like you saw the Warriors do, and they'll just figure it out over a 7-game series. You can just load up on him. I don't care where you put him at. If a guy just walks the ball up the court, you can just load up because the other five guys. But if you catch the ball and put him on the weak side, for instance, he'll have 2 or 3 seconds before the defense can actually adjust, if that makes sense.
Okay? Yeah, and they've got Kyrie, who's a primary ball handler as well. So
okay. All right. So if I were Luka, I would play the two, because he has a significant advantage. Why? He's bigger than every other two guard in the entire NBA. He can post up every other two guard in the NBA. And he can play the game from the weak side, which every great coach in the NBA will want to take advantage of his ability to score on the weak side of the floor. It's easy. He's doing this on the strong side of the floor. Imagine what he could do if we just put him on the weak side, where there's only maybe four players on the weak side, meaning him and someone else on the other side of the floor, while the other six guys are on the other side, on the strong side of the floor, okay? Or you can swing him, play him into isolation, and give him an isolation for 2 seconds before the defense can actually shift, okay? So there's so many creative things you can do with him if he just doesn't dribble the ball up the court. Now, that to me will give you the best chance to now where he doesn't, instead of him dribbling, let's say 400 times during the course of a game, I want to see, can I get him 50 points dribbling with 50 to 75 times in a game?
Well, that's a lot of his scoring comes out, bringing the ball up, screen, this is what I'm saying. His step back, and a lot of his playmaking comes out of that as well, though.
This is what I'm saying. Mo, again, I want to be able, see, when you become a great scorer, now you carry a burden and a responsibility to be able to play with the other four players on the floor. Okay, I played with a guy who could score, okay? But if you ever watch him, the efficiency in the way in which he played allowed the other four guys to play alongside him. And whenever he needed to play and go outside of the offense, like Luka can do. See, Luka is rare in this sense. He can play outside of any offense and score. That's a true gift.
Yeah, he could be an offense himself, just given.
Okay. But my job now as a coach is to say, hey, Luka, we're going to figure out how these other guys can play alongside with you. And you only have your only job every night is to win the game for us.
So the problem with Dallas, though.
So if Luka plays the two, in my opinion, now that gives me the advantage to be able to coach him and the other four players on the floor with him so that we're always organized in a way and gives us an opportunity to win a game. Because everyone knows this. I got a guy that can go for 50 any given night. And all I got to do is make sure that he doesn't go outside of the offense until it's time. Because I know. Okay, so if I can do that, and then now I can place the responsibility of running the team on someone else. Now I can place the responsibility of, hey, I need you to get 20 points every night. That's my job. Let me figure out how to get 20 points. Luka, get him 20 points. Luka, let this guy run the team. Let this guy be the screener. Let this guy be in the dunker spot. And let's play out of a space to where every single time you catch the ball, Luka, you have 9 people in front of you.
But that's what's happening already, though. He's coming up with 9 people in front of him.
9 people in front of you, but 9 people in front of you with an opportunity to pass to your other 4 players.
Mm-hmm.
Not just clear out. No, I'm going to give you an opportunity to play with the other 4 players so that you can win the game. Whenever it's time, if it presents itself to win the game in the first quarter, do it. The third quarter, fourth quarter, whatever it's time to win the game, I have complete confidence you'll figure it out. However, it's important for those other guys to carry some responsibility so that we just don't walk it up the floor. Luka does Luka things. Luka does all of these amazing things. And then you're giving up 127 points. You can't do that. And the reason they're giving up those shots is because they're playing isolation basketball all the time, which gives you poor transition basketball. You can't win this way in this league. He's a beautiful offensive player. However, it's important to understand this league is really good. You hear me say that all the time. These players are really, really good. These coaches are really, really good. And at some point, we got to figure out how to play with the other guys on the floor because we know he can score. We already know that. And that, to me, is the balance of playing with a great player. Because he's truly a magnificent. He's not good. He's a magnificent offensive player.
Luka already is getting you 5 to 15 assists a night on any given night, just through the style he's playing right now. But I wanted to ask you this, you know, scoring a ball isn't a problem for the Dallas Mavericks. Because like you said, Luka can win you a game almost single-handedly. The other side of the floor, we've spoken about Luka's responsibility and what he needs to do on that side of the floor a number of times on this show. But when you look at the Mavericks roster, do you think that that's optimized for a player like Luka Doncic? Because when I look at that team who went to the Conference Finals, when you've got guys like Reggie Bullock and Dorian Finney-Smith, who can space the floor on offense, but also can somewhat lock in on defense, the roster now, I look at it and Kyrie, not a good defender. You've got PJ Washington at the 4, who's kind of undersized. You've got Daniel Gafford at the 5, who's, you know, often injured. And then you've got Derek Lively at the 5, who's a rookie. So it's like, do the Mavericks need to do a better job constructing a roster that plays to the strengths of Luka Doncic rather than just putting whoever around him and letting him take the blame for their defensive struggles?
Well, see, here's the thing, Mo, is, and sometimes I just wish I never played, because if you never play, then if you never play the game, you'll just look at the roster and you'll go, well, this guy's averaging, or this guy's just getting assists. We need to build around that guy. No, we're a team. Like, it's really hard for people to see the game outside of themselves. We have to be committed to 3 things as a team. I don't care who they are, right? You have to defend, You have to secure the rebound on this great defensive possession, or else you're still on defense, and you have to be able to share the ball. Sharing the ball is not addressed or not determined by an assist. Just because you got an assist don't mean that you're passing the ball. A lot of times the best player passes the ball and you only have one option once he passes it to you, because he's been dribbling for like 8 seconds, 10 seconds, and then he passes it to you with 2 seconds on the shot clock, and that's an assist. And so at the end of the night, a guy has 10 assists and he only passed it like 13 times the whole night because he was getting double teamed and he refused to pass it unless he couldn't shoot it that night.
Shouts Trae Young.
Okay. So when you understand that, that's why assists don't tell the answer. They don't tell the true story. The story is, if you're going to be the best player on the team, that has to be established with trust. Trust in your teammates that, yeah, I want to pass it to you. And yeah, you're going to pass it back. A lot of times these guys will only pass it to you, and the only option you have is to shoot it, or it'll be a 24-second clock. Like, it would be fascinating to see. It would be fascinating to see how many times the guys actually get the ball before 8 seconds on the shot clock. All right? So I just think now it's important. Look, Luka's, I mean, he's been first team. He's won every individual accolade other than, I guess, the MVP. Now it's time to, like, everyone play their part in this game. So if you're going to look at their team, build a team. Like, every team, statistically speaking,
I just looked up the numbers now. The Mavericks have actually attempted the least amount of field goals between 4 and 0 seconds in the shot clock. And then when it comes to between 4 and 7 seconds, where are they on this list? They're still in the bottom 10. So it's not like they're taking a ton of shots late in the shot clock.
Okay. And what that could also mean is, that could be a problem because they're not passing the ball to one another because they don't trust one another to get late in the shot clock. And what's even worse than that, okay, this is why I say the numbers don't tell the true story. What's worse than that is shooting early in the shot clock. Maybe when you shoot early in the shot clock, that doesn't give you time to have what's called your defensive balance to get back on the other end.
Well, over 50% of their shots come between 15 and 7 seconds. So the average time to shoot.
Exactly. That's fine. Whatever the average is. However, what we do know, and we can look at numbers only tell you what they want you to tell you. You can make the numbers however you want to make them.
I'm just reading them out based on
that's what I'm saying. We can read them. However, what we know is that if you want to win in this league, I don't care what your numbers say, you have to be able to defend. In whatever fashion. We just talked about the Minnesota Timberwolves. I think they were the number one, or they may still be the number one defensive team. Okay. But I can assure you, when the playoffs begin, they're going to have a problem on the defensive end once the playoffs start. Why? Because teams are going to exploit their one glaring weakness: the ability to defend screen roll with Rudy Gobert. So the numbers don't always tell you the story. They'll tell you whatever that you wanted to tell you. They'll tell you whatever. It is what it is. However, if you want to win, which whatever fashion, however you defend, you want to be a funnel defense, you want to be a switching defense, you want to be a full court defense, you might want to be a half court defense. You may be a defense that pushes baseline, whatever it is you do, you commit to that. However, the teams that are going to win, okay, which is the bottom line, you have to be able to adjust. You have to be flexible, and you have to be able to make adjustments night in and night out.
Okay, but what I'm saying is, though, the offense, regardless of whether you think it's good for the whole team or not, has proven to work. The defense, on the other hand, Luka's carried that team to the Western Conference Finals. That defense is the issue. So what I'm saying is, you've got Luka Doncic, who's your best player, but he's
a bad defender. Like 2 years ago.
Okay.
Every year is new. So we can say 2 years ago they went to the conference finals. Last year, they didn't make the playoffs. This year, every year is a new year.
So let's talk about this year.
Let's talk about this year.
So you have Luka Doncic on your roster, who's a bad defender. And although there have been flashes where he's been trying harder, but just generally speaking, he's a bad defender. He's your best player, right? He's, like I said before, 6'7", big, strong body. You can hide that in a team. But what you've gone and done is you've traded for another guard to play alongside him who also needs the ball in his hands on offense, but also defensively is a very weak defender. So now you have to compensate for two weak defenders. We've seen teams been built, you know, like look at what Doc Rivers is doing in Milwaukee. He's doing a better job of putting them in positions where Damian Lillard isn't getting cooked down the perimeter every possession down. So you can build
it. But that's not, you're only giving half of the equation. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
If you're gonna see, I'm a little older, so all this new way of talking, it's not correct. Like, we got to tell the truth here. The truth is, if you want to be a good defensive team, you have to be a disciplined offensive team. Your best defense is your offense.
Okay.
Your best defense is your offense. Okay. So if you watch the Milwaukee Bucks, the reason the Milwaukee Bucks defense is improving is because they've committed to slowing their offense down. They're not playing fast anymore. I don't know what the stats are because I'm not a stat guy. I can look at the game. I don't need stats to watch the game. I'm watching the game. The Milwaukee Bucks, the only person that runs a fast break is Giannis. No one, if you watch their games now, it's really funny to me. I was watching the game. I was like, Doc Rivers just said, you know what? Screw playing fast. We're just going to be committed to playing at our pace because they're not an athletic team. They're not an athletic team. So if they're playing fast and shooting shots early in the clock and pacing space like most teams are committed, then their defense is going to lack. The only person on their team that runs a fast break is Giannis. The reason they've improved their defense is because now they're disciplined on the offensive end. Okay? When you play against a team, you got to be disciplined.
Okay, let me ask you this then, because 2 years ago, when they did make it to the conference finals, they were about 10 points per 100 possessions better defensively than they are now. So what's changed in the offense?
Who is they?
The Dallas Mavericks. What's changed in their offense in the style of play? Because it's not like Luka Doncic has changed his style of play in the last two seasons. What's changed between then and now?
Okay. What's changed? Well, one, at that time, you had a guard, Jalen Brunson. You had different players on the team. You had whatever. Sometime you'll just find something that works with their group. Okay.
Exactly.
This group is not working.
Exactly. Why? That's why I'm asking, is it fair to put all of this blame onto Luka Doncic when the front office needs to take some responsibility for, your favorite word, roster construction?
Okay. When you're on a team, you can't just blame, right? Right? So, all right, you want to blame the executives, right? You want to blame the coach. You want to blame the player. You want to blame Luka, right? He's the best player. You want to blame the owner. Whatever, whoever you want to blame, you can blame. Everyone is held accountable because this league, it's very difficult to win. So you can't be the worst defensive team in the league and then just blame that all on the front office. You can't be that because you can't tell me. I know Jason Kidd. You can't tell me that Jason Kidd is saying, no, man, let's not play any defense tonight.
Okay, well, you just said Doc Rivers has gone to Milwaukee, changed how they play, and their defense has improved. Why can't Jason Kidd improve the defense that the Mavericks should play as the coach of the team who tells the players what to run?
Okay, because these players, believe it or not, they're not robots. Every player has a different skill set, okay? So I don't see a Brook Lopez-type player for the Dallas Mavericks. I don't see a Giannis.
That goes back to roster construction.
I don't see a lot of Brooke Lopez players in the NBA. I don't see a lot of Giannis's on every team. Okay.
One day.
I don't see a lot of players that can just play like Damian Lillard. Like, that's why Damian Lillard is Damian Lillard. Okay. I don't see that. However, when you have a team, you have to build a team around the strengths and weaknesses of your team. This team is a team that's the following. With the exception of Luka, is there anyone else that plays below the free throw line? Is there anyone else that gets a post up? Is there anyone else besides Kyrie that has an opportunity to play or whatever? Is there anyone else that's just not shooting open shots because they're doubling? Like, what's their style of play? Like, what are they doing? Who else is dribble driving and penetrating? Who else is doing that? Like, it's sometimes chemistry is a real thing. Like, these players aren't just robots. So it's easy to blame. And it's easy to just say, well, they're doing it. Why can't we do it? Well, if I remember correctly, if my memory serves me correctly, I know I'm getting older. You know, Brooke Lopez was like up for Defensive Player of the Year last year.
Mm-hmm.
He's an anchor on the defensive end. I don't see an anchor on the Milwaukee Bucks. If my memory serves me correctly, on the Dallas Mavericks, I don't see a Giannis-type former defensive player of the year, what, a couple times?
You don't see them on, like, 28 other teams either, but 28 other teams don't have a defense this bad.
Okay, but I don't see 28 other teams playing the way that the Dallas Mavericks play either. On the offensive end. You can't, if you're going to play 1-4, the Houston Rockets were bad on defense too. Why? Because their best player was an isolation player.
James Harden.
Like, you can't have it both ways. So if you're going to play isolation, so that means the following. Three or more of the players just going to be on the baseline. Two probably going to be in the corner. One guy's going to be in the dunker spot. On the weak side, and the other guy's probably going to be at the elbow on the other side so that you can have the spacing necessary to let this player play. That's just a fact. So how else are you going to run an offense that's going to utilize your best player unless you're giving him the space to operate? Well, that's called a 1-4 flat. So that's the reason why their defense is so bad in transition, because you got three guys every time down or a majority of the time on the baseline. So what am I expecting? Now, on one hand, Luka scores, but on the other hand, you got to give up something. Oh, maybe that's why some teams have what's called a blended offense. So when you watch the Denver Nuggets, yeah, they run their break, they play Jokic in the post some, they play them at the high post some. So that way they always have the proper spacing to get back in transition. I mean, that's what this is about. If we're going to be a team, let's be a team. I'm not blaming anybody. Sometimes your team may not have the ability to do this. So I don't know that about Dallas, but what I do know is that they've committed to giving the ball to Luka. And I know what that's going to, I know how that plays itself out. You can't have it both ways. You can't have it both ways.
I know you got a lot of love for Jason Kidd, but it sounds to me like BJ Armstrong should be the coach of the Mavericks. But no, that's a different conversation.
No. This is yeah. Basketball 101.
If it's like, basketball 101, they should be changing something.
Again, we don't know until we get in there and see it for ourselves. Like, this is what I'm saying. We got to get in there and see it for ourselves.
Okay. Well, speaking of defense, let's flip the switch. Can you tell me who you think are the top five defenses since the All-Star break? We did the bottom five. Who do you think are the five best? You mentioned one of them already. In fact, the number one team. That's the Milwaukee Bucks since the All-Star break.
And the reason I've been watching Milwaukee is because I'm fascinated with problems. Like, I tell you this all the time. Like, I love problems.
Oh, PJ, right? I got a lot.
Yes. And here's a championship caliber team in the Milwaukee Bucks. And before Doc gets there, they have the worst defensive team in the league.
Yep. And now they've got the best defensive team. But do you know who the other four teams are in terms of defensive rating? Points allowed per 100 possessions. Milwaukee has only given up 102.6.
I'm going to say your Celtics got to be up there, right?
We're fifth, 106.9.
Yeah, I gotta say they have to be up there.
One more from the east and two from the west.
From the east, from the east, from the east. Let me look at the east. Is Miami up there?
Nope.
Cleveland.
Nope. You're closer with Miami.
Really? Or not Orlando, right?
Yep. Orlando are second. 104.5 points allowed per 100 possessions since the All-Star break.
I've watched them. I haven't their defense, but you know what? They have a good balance
the way
they
Jalen play. Suggs.
I give them credit. I watched them play the other night versus the, I think it was the Pistons. They got a nice balance.
They're back up to fourth in the East, by the way, very quietly. Yeah, do you know
they got a nice balance?
The other two teams from the West, one of them is pretty obvious because we spoke about them yesterday and today.
Ooh, Minnesota.
Yeah, because they've got the league's best defense. They're fourth right now since the All-Star break, 106.4. And then the final team, I think you'll be quite happy to hear, from the Western Conference.
New Orleans?
Yeah, third best defense, 105.3 points.
I watched them the other day.
And they have quietly made their way up to fifth.
Yeah,
in the Western Conference.
I want to believe in that team. I'm gonna tell you. I just want to say this. I want to give this guy some love. That guy Brandon Ingram.
Uh huh.
That young man. He's a star. Indeed. No, he's a star. Now I don't know what's going on down there in New Orleans. Because you know my guy Willie Green is the coach down there, and you know a fellow Detroit native. But that kid Brandon Ingram, hey, he's a star.
He can score that basketball.
Now, if I were coaching, he would be a guy I want to coach.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and the reason I want to coach him over is because it's just so obvious to me that he is a forward, right? And you know, he's a forward. And Mo, he can score with the best of them.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
He can score. He give it to you any way you want it. And he doesn't settle for threes. That's why I really love him. He just doesn't bail you out on the defensive end with a heat check. Like, he gets to his spots. He's got size. He gives you the effort on the defensive end. And he's like, there's some guys I would love to coach. Like, he's one of them I would like love to coach because I think he is a championship caliber star, meaning you could play with him and play with other good players because he's efficient. He goes about his business, and he's a professional scorer. Like, he's just not committed to, like, a three ball. He's just not committed to playing in transition. Like, whoa, he can come out of a timeout, and you can say, take on the double team. He can do that. He can play isolation. He can do that. He can play in a system, catch and shoot. He could do that. I want to believe in that team down there in New Orleans, but something must be going on. I don't know what it is.
Something's always something going must on. Be good. Yeah, shout out to Zion, though. He said if he makes the All-Star team next year, he'll do the dunk contest. So
again, I must say what's going on the court.
I like them, though. In the playoffs, though, I like that. If they're healthy, if they've got a healthy squad in the playoffs, I don't want to face that.
I love the team, but they break my heart. I love their team, but they break I think I know what's missing from their team. I think I know what's missing.
Go ahead.
What's missing from their team is the ability to play downhill.
Interesting.
It's a requirement in today's game. It's just required. You have to be able to play downhill. They have excellent. Their front court is just phenomenal. I mean, Brandon Ingram, Zion, and Valanciunas, excellent. Then you got Murphy and them guys. Jones,
lockdown defender.
But they don't have that one player.
They don't have a true point guard, in my opinion. Like, Alvarado is nice as a backup point guard, but I don't think CJ McCollum is right.
They need a lead guard who can just play downhill. Yeah. Like, just play downhill. Like, you know what I mean? Like, well, I'm not saying he needs to be Shea Alexander. But
it would be nice if it'd be nice if it was though.
But you need a player who can play downhill. Why? Because Brandon Ingram and those guys, they're just professional scorers. But if you had a player who could just play downhill and run screen roll, for instance, 1-3 screen roll and turn the corner, right? Not just shoot, because CJ can shoot, mm-hmm. but you need guys who can turn the corner. Because in the end, you always need people to put pressure on the defense by attacking the paint. You got to get paint touches, mm-hmm. especially in the playoffs. And that's the one thing that's missing, because if you can turn the corner with Zion, you can't leave Zion. You know what I'm saying? You can't switch on a pick with Zion, and you can't switch on a pick with Brandon Ingram. So that is the one element that I keep saying they can't exploit. So imagine if you had, you know, Jamal Murray playing on that team. He could just turn the corner. Because you can't switch with Zion. Like, there isn't a guard who could switch on Zion. You can't, like, Steph Curry and Draymond. You can't switch that. Okay. So that's what I'm saying. So if they could add that one element to the game, to me, that opens up what I think they should be. I mean, I really think this is an upper echelon team in the Western Conference. That's what I think.
I'd love to see it, man. I would absolutely love to see that. But only time's going to tell. As always, make sure you subscribe to the show, YouTube, Spotify, Apple, wherever you get your podcasts from. Shout out to all the Mavericks fans. Hang in there. Don't worry, guys. It's going to be all right. It's going to be all right. Yes. To the Pelicans fans, big up to you guys. I like what I'm seeing. They've had an easier kind of schedule, but let's see if they can take this momentum and roll with it, because the West and the East right now are jam-packed. Right. Everyone's moving all over the place. There's not a lot of games separating teams. So, you know, between 4 and 8 in the Eastern Conference, there's 1.5 games separating all those teams. Over in the West, when you're looking at that 5 spot the Pelicans are in now, the 5 spot to the 10 spot, there's 4 games separating all of them. So a few wins here, a few losses there. You never know what can happen. So stay tuned with the Hoop Genius Podcast as we bring you everything you need to know as we gear up for the NBA playoffs. Make sure you stay locked in. And most importantly, until next time, like Brandon Ingram does, get buckets.
Oh, yes.